for 96.5 The Fan, the editor over at Chiefs on SI.com, Joshua Briscoe, join us here on the show. He's going to join us every Friday at 11 o'clock. Josh, it's great to have you on the show, man. Have you ever had your hair bleached before?
God, I'm so glad you asked. Not only have I bleached my hair, I've bleached my own hair. I've had others bleach my hair. I have gone blonde to black, and I have done that in the inverse order. This is my only advice right now, is that I'm glad that there's a professional in the building, right? Because the mistake you don't want to make is to bleach it once, think, oh, it could go a little lighter and, you know, get platinum and look a little better. Let's just do a second round, because your scalp will remember that for a couple of weeks after. So that's my only word of warning. I think Drew seems to be in good hands. Frankly, I think he's going to pull off the look maybe better than Joe Burrow did. But just don't go double down in 1 or 2 days. Give your scalp a break, Drew, if that opportunity arises.
Second question before we get to the Chiefs matchup on Sunday Night Football against the Falcons is, have you been keeping up with our friend Pesto over on social media? I told the audience that we'd been texting a little bit. Nothing about the Chiefs and only about a giant baby penguin.
Yeah, between Mudang, the baby hippo that's taken over the internet, and our giant adult penguin son, Pesto, I am well surrounded by various small animals. Cody, I don't even know if you know, within February, my wife and I got our second dog, a three-legged dog that we named Hopper quite cruelly. We are the epicenter right now of funny animals that bring us joy in life. And when the Chiefs play games that stress you out, it's really important to find the joy that can come from these wild little critters that infiltrate our lives.
And their starting running back on Sunday has a pet crocodile, right? So it just all comes together right here. What are you expecting, Josh, from Carson Steele? Are we talking like 12 carries? What do you think the breakdown's going to be?
I also have to say, it's an alligator named Crocky J.
That's true.
That's Carson's fault. It's way too difficult. I am expecting a full committee, but the funny thing at this point is that Samaje Perine, you know, falls into the Chiefs' lap at cutdown day. You get another gift from Denver, and it feels like it rounds out the running back room, of course, before the Pacheco injury. Now at this point, and obviously Pacheco got hurt, you know, right at the 2-minute warning, basically, so if almost no time at all to see what the post-Pacheco plan is. But Perine has not, through these first 2 weeks, gotten the look that I would have expected him to. Despite being in the right spot on a couple of passing plays, he had the one off his fingertip in week one. The place this leads me now is to where I don't think that Carson Steele is necessarily the most dangerous running back in this backfield right now, but he seems to fit what the Chiefs are going to want for the majority of their running back reps. We did see him survive a couple pass pro reps in the preseason. Looks really good in week two there, even though that's probably Perine's role on third down. I could see Steele getting, I would say, 9 to 12 carries somewhere. Right around that double-digit mark would not surprise me. Much more than that certainly would. Much less than that would surprise me, because somebody has to carry the football, and I don't think they're going to give Perine 8.
Well, and the whole part that comes back around to it is the pass protection thing is actually more important now than ever. Yesterday, the offensive coordinator, Matt Nagy, would not say who's starting at left tackle for this team on Sunday. So I don't really care who it is. If you're not willing to commit to it on Thursday, well, then I know you need extra help chipping on Sunday.
Yeah, I think there's certainly truth to that, and I am worried about Matthew Judon. He's not the player that Trey Hendrickson is, but you talk about like a veteran that does have a string of pass rush moves, that does have some versatility in how he can win. That's a bad matchup for Kingsley right now, more so than, think about a George Karloftis type, a high-energy guy who doesn't really bend, who's not quite as refined, but is really strong. Kingsley's going to survive those matchups pretty well. He survived relatively well in week one. I'm a little worried about what Judon's going to do to Kingsley, but I do think it will be Kingsley, and I do think the Chiefs know that right now, too. I think they got to the point where they said, hey, we can play a little bit of gamesmanship. We can do a little bit of the switcheroo. Who's it going to be? I'd be really, really surprised if when they start having warm-ups on Sunday night, if it's not Kingsley out there with the ones, because I think they knew there would be growing pains. I kind of believe, I don't always believe, but I kind of believe what Andy Reid said in his post-game press conference of a step back to take two steps forward, try to seal the gap there, the flex seal tape over the leak on the left side for that final drive. I think Kingsley's still going to be the guy. I think he'll be the guy on Sunday. but they have to keep Mahomes upright. Also, because you have less reliability in the running game, because you really haven't seen Carson Steele do it at the level that I think they're probably going to ask him to do it at.
We're talking to Joshua Briscoe, the editor of Chiefs on SI.com. He's our Chiefs contributor. He's going to join us every Friday at 11 o'clock throughout the football season. One thing that, we haven't even probably talked enough about this week, Josh, is the turnover margin so far. It's 2 weeks. Yeah. I get it. But they're bottom seven, I believe, already. And whether it was Carson Steele on a fumble or, of course, some bad decisions by Patrick Mahomes, this is something that has to, get corrected pretty quickly.
Yeah, 100%. And I think maybe this is my optimism of the last many years of watching the Chiefs offense. I kind of think you could spin that as a general positive, because I think it is still the best answer for why has the Chiefs offense looked so stuffy? Why has everything offensively not moved quite the way that you'd want it to? I think it's in the largest role, I think, is the turnover problem. The reason that I'm somewhat heartened by that is because it's not necessarily some institutional problem or a lack of talent. You got some really, really bad decisions from Patrick Mahomes. Those are really, really rare. Those are extremely uncommon. I do not think he's going to have three or four interceptable passes every week. Remember, against the Bengals, two of them stayed on the board. That third one, that the penalty was away from the play enough that Mahomes had three that you could really, really consider to be bad passes, bad decisions, and out of character for him. Not even like Lou Anarumo masterclass stuff that where they, oh, they just showed him something different. Again, just some bad decisions. And I think the throw to Worthy down the sideline was just kind of a bad throw. You got to put that out in front of the guy. But all of that to say, as long as Carson Steele kind of has that Kareem Hunt rookie year, fumble it and then don't put it on the ground again the rest of the season, if he keeps on that track, I don't know that that's – he didn't show that in college, right? That wasn't why he was undrafted. He's not sloppy with the football. And Mahomes certainly hasn't been that guy. So it is a massive problem, and if it continues, it's something that can derail a season. The good news is I don't think it's going to continue, certainly at the rate that we've seen so far.
Outside of Chris Jones, who's obviously an absolute monster, where would you put the state of the pass rush?
Yeah, great question. It's not fantastic. The metrics can change a little bit depending on which metrics you're looking at, because every outlet kind of they ID a pressure differently and the time that it takes from point A to point B. But this is a team that misses Charles Omenihu right now, and we were hoping to see, is there going to be a spark of another gear for George Karlaftis? And to this point, there hasn't been. I really like Mike Dana, but if he's your third defensive end, you feel pretty good. If he's your second and Karlaftis is your first, you really are just kind of building your universe around the gravity of Chris Jones, hoping the other guys can win. I should mention that Tershawn Wharton has had a fabulous start to the year. So the Chiefs have gotten pressure from the interior, and it lets them be a little more creative with Jones because Wharton can win on the inside. But I'm a 7 out of 10 worried about the edge group at this point, at least until Omenihu comes back. And obviously he got hurt just about as late into the year as you can. So I don't know what exactly his timeline will be. At this point, they kind of just have to survive until then with the group they have now. That obviously plays into the secondary also needing to be extraordinary, because the worse your pass rush is, the longer your secondary has to hold on. I think there's a cyclical nature there that does, for me at least, mostly revolve around the edge duo there being a little bit underwhelming at this point. Certainly you haven't seen a whole lot from Felix, and unless you're waiting on Malik Herring to change your edge group, I just don't know that it's there right now.
I think they openly admitted before the season that they didn't like their pass rushers, and so we should probably take that as gospel now. Like they pretty much told you they didn't like him, and now they're not playing well. I shouldn't be stunned by that result.
No, and again, I think in large point, not to just like rag on one of the local guys, but I do think that that's a little bit of a consequence to where Felix is right now, because you invest even a late or the last first round pick, you still invest a first round pick in that position. You think, hey, it'll be kind of a red shirt year. Obviously, B.J. Thompson, same draft class, totally different situation. You can't really compare those. But whenever you have that hope for Felix to say, oh, if he can be a legit number three defensive end in year two, well, then now this group is maybe it's a really strong secondary edge in George Karlaftis, and then two good number three type guys in Dana and FAU, and then you get Omenihu back at some point. I can see the group coming together right now, though, and then even with the trade of Tam Thomas, who hasn't made it active yet this season, you're right that I think they've shown there's some concern there. I don't know that there's a solution loading outside of just being patient for Omenihu.
What about Atlanta, Josh? We saw on Monday night, huge win for them. It was really only one drive where Kirk Cousins and that offense looked effective. And so versus watching Aaron Rodgers coming off an Achilles, who looked great last night, he was mobile, all of that. Kirk Cousins is a statue back there. Do you think that maybe this is the perfect quarterback, though, for us to feel much differently about Karlaftis and about this defensive front?
It's certainly a huge opportunity for them to shift that narrative. Something I didn't mention there is that obviously with Lamar Jackson, you're doing a lot of containing, and Burrow gets rid of the ball quickly. Now, Kirk Cousins also gets rid of the ball quickly, but he's even less of a threat, as you've alluded to escape and pick up a few yards than a guy like Joe Burrow even. I am a little bit nervous, not just because of that final drive. I went back and, you know, rewatched the whole Monday night game and tried to figure out what exactly it is that is making me nervous right now. I'm still having a hard time putting my finger on it, honestly. But this road first road game, NFC game, week three, Kirk Cousins, primetime, this seems like it has all of those ingredients for, not to just, you know, repeat the most recent history, but a Harrison Butker last-second field goal to win or lose it, and typically that results in winning it. I'm a little bit nervous about that. I think it's mostly about where the Chiefs have been, more so than it's about this Falcons team. But in that two-minute drive, you did see the loosest that Kirk Cousins has looked in a Falcons uniform. You did see him being a little bit more maneuverable in the pocket. We saw him, I don't know what exactly the ratio was, it's certainly better than week one. You saw him in the play action game where he thrives. You got a little bit more of that against the Eagles, but he still doesn't look completely comfortable there. I will be fascinated to see if either the Chiefs end up by a couple of scores or if the Falcons end up in a similar situation where it's, hey, you've got 2 minutes to go win this thing, go into autopilot, Kirk Cousins, and just play quarterback the way that you can do at your highest level. I'm really interested in that, and I'm also terrified to see if Kyle Pitts like has his career game finally against the defense that's really struggled against tight ends.
Yeah, that's I think that's where everybody's kind of keeping an eye on. But you know what? Even if he has a career day, Josh, I think it's going to take a lot more than that for the Chiefs defense to actually have some major problems. It needs Drake London, you know, Bijan or Drake London's going to have to go off for 80 apiece as well or something like that.
Yeah, and Bijan obviously has been productive. And it was interesting yesterday hearing, I don't know if you guys played or listened back to the pressers or whatever, but listening to Dave Merritt talk about how the secondary has to deal with Bijan at the second level, really starting with Drake London. He compared him to Hines Ward in terms of the physicality in the run-blocking game. It's extremely high. If I was compared to Hines Ward for any reason whatsoever, I would take that as high praise. And so you're right about the passing game, and I think it's a weird matchup for Trent McDuffie, who has been a bona fide stud. I mean, more than just these first 2 weeks, but man, he's just been almost perfect. But it's a weird matchup for him. I don't know if he's going to end up on Darnell Mooney more, or if you're just going to let the Falcons kind of dictate the matchups to you as the defense if you're Steve Spagnuolo, because there's not quite the follow around Jamar Chase type of matchup, and he didn't follow Chase for 100% of the snaps either. But you're right. I think Bijan is going to be interesting because this is a team that has had the issues with backs and tight ends, I know what's going on with Nick Bolton. Nick Bolton's playing like a version of Nick Bolton that didn't play in the preseason and throughout training camp, and I'm lower on Nick Bolton than most. I'm not really sure what's going on with Drew Tranquil at this point. Another reason that the Bijan-Pitts duo gives me a little bit of pause. One big Darnell Mooney play and the entire game kind of can turn on a 60-yard touchdown. He'd have to do most of the work. I don't think Kirk is pushing it 60 yards at this point. But there are just enough risky ingredients in here that I'm really like triple-checking my notes as we get closer to primetime.
Josh Briscoe, editor over at ChiefsOnSI.com. He's our Chiefs contributor every Friday at 11 o'clock here on Cody and Gold. You'll hear him throughout the week on all our shows as well. Appreciate it, man. Looking forward to having you on.
Hey, man, I'm happy to be here. And if I need to dye my hair to rejoin you guys next week, let me know. I'm happy to do it.